Hello and welcome to the Around the Nation podcast for week four, the fourth week of the Division III football season. For D3Football.com, I'm Pat Coleman.
And I'm Keith McMillan.
And it was a week in which, you know, pretty much we kind of see coming to the end of non-conference play. Teams are through their non-conference schedule, and it's kind of time of year where recently we've looked back at our preseason conference rankings. For those of you who purchased Kickoff know, and we'd like to thank you, of course, for subscribing to that preseason publication that we put on the internet each of the last 3 years. One of the things we do is we rank the conferences in the preseason, and of course that's pretty much based on how things ended up the previous season, a lot of it based on non-conference play and then on NCAA playoff play. And, you know, there's some projection of how we think teams are going to do this season, but, you know, right now, Keith, we really see some a little bit of changing in the landscape, a couple of significant moves at the very least.
If you go back to last season, remember the MAC was in the situation where they lost three teams and went from an 11-team league to an 8-team league and had an opportunity, really, to schedule a lot of teams in the East that they hadn't had chances to play before, teams out of the NJAC, teams out of the ACFC, and they didn't do so hot in that non-conference schedule. And this year, I think they've turned it around a little bit. You know, even the games they lost, if you think about the Albright-Salisbury game, you know, they've represented pretty well. And then you have Delaware Valley, of course, with the two big top 10 upsets.
Last year, Wilkes, highly touted coming into the season, 0-3 in non-conference play. Delaware Valley, 0-3 non-conference. Widener, 1-2, and then went 1-out in the NCAA playoffs. Lycoming, which has had some strong teams in recent years, had begun to struggle. They went 0-3. Kings went 0-3. And there just wasn't a whole lot to say about the MAC last year. And it seems like it's almost the exact opposite this season in a lot of cases.
Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, that's obviously the fun of watching every season. But I mean, you know, in the case of the MAC, really, it's a league where, or a conference where you have an opportunity now, like I said, with that smaller schedule to play. They're going to have to play tough non-conference games every year. Almost every team up and down the league, you look at it, and they're going to have an opportunity to prove themselves every year. And I think that works in their favor in at least one significant way, where if you're the team that doesn't win the conference for whatever reason, you will have had several non-conference games to try to impress and maybe get a pool C bid.
Yeah, you look at the eight teams that are in the league, six of them went 2-1 in non-conference play. Kings went 1-2 with a pretty good win against Randolph-Macon. Only Wilkes got shut out. They went 0-3, but, you know, really to focus on Delaware Valley, because they're the ones making the big news this week and a couple of weeks ago. It's a pair of top 10 upsets at home, first knocking off Wesley back in week two and then defeating Salisbury on Saturday.
Yeah, and if you look at this one on Saturday, I think the thing about it that was really so impressive with the Aggies is that they took a lot of Salisbury's best shots, and there was just nothing fluky about this win. You can't blame it on the weather. You can't blame it on a whole bunch of turnovers, although I think Salisbury had three and Del Valle just had one. But, I mean, it was a game where, you know, Salisbury made it an eight-point game late in the fourth quarter, and Del Valle drove down and scored one more time to put it away.
Yep, Salisbury, you know, it's their first loss of the season, of course. Maybe even a bigger loss on defense. We know that Jarrell Chandler, the All-American defensive end, got taken off the field late in the game, had his knee immobilized, wrapped in ice. And, you know, the way that Salisbury is going right now, it's not the first person they've lost off the defensive side in the depth chart, and I don't think they have a whole lot of margin for error either, you know, in terms of their personnel or, of course, in trying to chase a Pool B bid.
Well, yeah, they don't have a lot of margin for error, because you look at what St. John Fisher did on Saturday, and that game coming up in 2 weeks, Salisbury going to St. John Fisher there in New York. And that's a game that maybe before yesterday you thought that game favored Salisbury a little bit because Salisbury was looking so strong. And now you look at it, and just the way St. John Fisher performed in the second half against Ithaca, and really the way Salisbury now, you look at their defense, didn't have a great game yesterday. And then also losing key members of that defense now. They're in a tough situation.
Salisbury did run for 274 yards. That was on 48 attempts. And remember, Salisbury's traditionally one of the top rushing teams in the nation. And on the other side, you know, Delaware Valley had especially a huge second half. They ended up with 487 total yards. Matt Isgro, the quarterback, on the afternoon, 17-27 passing with four touchdowns. Matt Cook, 34 carries for 161 yards. And our own Gordon Mann talked to Delaware Valley coach Jim Clements on how the Aggies handled that odd defense from Salisbury.
They give us a tough look. They're 3-5-3, and they move around. Our guys are used to blocking the odd front. I mean, we're an odd front team as well. We don't do as much moving around and stacking as they do, but our guys are used to it. Sometimes it seems that they, you know, we catch them in a blitz, and that in a run game can hit on that.
Right.
You know, we were just staying on course, just not taking negatives, staying on course, and Matt's good enough that if he gets a one-on-one, he's going to win that battle a lot of times. So we're very fortunate. They played their butts off. A lot of credit goes out to them. We have three seniors up there
right. That
are three quality football players.
Those three guys he talks about on the offensive line, that's Rob Shedlosky, Ralph Stambaugh, and Mike Zabrowski there, Keith.
You gain 487 yards. I mean, no matter how you look at that number, that's really the number that jumps off of the box score. And, you know, for Mike Esgro to have plenty of time to throw, obviously, is huge, but also to be able to balance it with your run. You know, I think if you ask Sherman Wood after that game, he said if you give up almost 500 yards offense, probably not going to win too many times. The fact that they were in that game in the fourth quarter and gave up that many yards is probably a pretty good sign.
One last stat to throw out from that game, Salisbury, which, you know, is, as we mentioned, a running team, likes to control the clock, but they had the ball for just 24-19 on Saturday, where Delaware Valley had it for 35 minutes and 41 seconds. So the game, you know, really kind of left D3Football.com top 25 voters with an interesting conundrum. How do you get Delaware Valley in the top 25? How do you jump them up far enough? Considering that, you know, there wasn't anybody at the bottom of the poll who lost on Saturday. There were, you know, teams that were on some teams' ballots, on some voters' ballots who lost. But, you know, the lowest ranked team that lost on Saturday was number 16, Ithaca. It's just hard to, where do you slide somebody in like that?
Well, I think this is, you know, a matter of personal opinion, but I think at some point early in the season, and for me, I think this was the week where you take everything you thought you knew in the preseason, you take that top 25 that you had, instead of just bumping teams up one spot when they lose, bumping teams down a couple spots if they're not as impressive as you thought they should be. You know, at some point you have enough data, and I think week four is a great time for this, to just tear the whole thing down and rebuild it again. And, you know, for me right now, I'm still working on my ballot. You know, we record the podcast on Sunday afternoon, and, you know, I'm at that point where you have to give Delaware Valley a lot of credit for beating two teams that we had ranked higher. I can't very well put Wesley, even though I started Wesley much higher than Delaware Valley, obviously didn't even have Delaware Valley in the poll at the beginning of the season. You can't justify putting them higher. You know, I personally, I'm not sure about where St. John's goes in against Concordia Moorhead, a team that won 9-6 on the road. So I think at some point you take the whole poll and you tear it down. Don't necessarily be afraid to say, all right, you know, Delaware Valley might jump 15 spots this week, or they might jump from out of your poll, out of your ballot to number 15 or something like that. But you look at the body of work. They've now beaten two top 10 teams. I don't think there's two teams that were in the top 10 at the time they played. I don't think any other team has a real comparable body of work at this point. And, I mean, certainly there's teams that have been super impressive so far. Mount Union, Mary Hardin-Baylor, North Central among them. But, I mean, you do have to – I think you're past the point of saying, okay, well, I didn't have Delaware Valley in there last week. Let me put them in at number 24 or something like that. But it's a matter of personal opinion, and everybody does their ballots differently.
So when I was looking at Delaware Valley, Keith, and trying to figure out what I was going to do, I hadn't looked at what I had voted last week. I was kind of going down the results because I was having this discussion with one of our other guys on Saturday night and trying to figure out who I was going to drop. And then I saw Central winning by one on the road at Albion, which has won just three times in the last 14 games. And I'm thinking, great, now certainly drop Central out, reshuffle everybody else. Then I go to open my ballot, and I find out that I had already dropped Central out last week, so I couldn't do that. It turns out I was kind of planning on keeping Franklin on my ballot. I thought I'd had them a little higher than 21, but it turned out that was where they were on my ballot. So it was pretty easy to drop Franklin out, reshuffle everybody else. And to the MIAC point you were talking about, I have all three of those teams on my ballot, none of them any higher than 19. And I have, at the moment in this order, Moorhead, St. John's, and then Augsburg. But knowing that those teams could obviously switch things around at any time, Augsburg and Concordia Moorhead coming up soon, Augsburg and St. John's not coming up until November.
Yeah, see, that sounds a lot like something that I had going on my ballot this week, which was having Ithaca and St. John Fisher both in that in the 15 to 22 range. I'll just say just to leave a little uh, little mystery about where I had them exactly. But when you know teams are going to sort each other, you know, sort things out by playing each other head to head in a couple weeks, sometimes you are a little wary of putting one too far ahead of the other. And I think now that St. John Fisher, clearly with that second half on Saturday, clearly established itself as better than Ithaca. You know, maybe Ithaca falls out of the ballot entirely, and St. John Fisher moves up, you know, maybe to where everybody else had them, which was right around the top 10. After that Mountain Union loss, I was maybe expecting a little better out of them and not really sure what to do with them. And I think, you know, the great thing about this schedule this year, the way things are shaking out, especially, you know, in the Mid-Atlantic in the East, with St. John Fisher playing Mountain Union, and then a lot of the Empire 8 teams, MAC teams, and NJAC teams all playing each other, and ACFC teams getting in that mix. So many results now will help us sort things out pretty clearly here in the next couple weeks, and going back the past few weeks, of course, the two Delaware Valley results, all the different teams that Salisbury played, and then having Salisbury play St. John Fisher. You know, a week from now, we're going to have a real clear picture of where a lot of these teams stand.
One of the teams that you know, we don't quite know nearly as much about right now, at least in terms of where they stack up against some of the other top teams in Division III, is someone that we talked about previously, Keith, and that's Millsaps. Millsaps, you know, is a team that is kind of all over the place. They're in a lot of different places on people's ballots. They started last week at number 19. The majors are definitely on the move upward this week, but not really sure where do you slot a team like that?
Well, I think part of what happened with them is they're a team that didn't make the playoffs last year. They were basically a 1-point loss and a last second loss away from being 10-0. So, depending on how you graded them, so more or less coming into the season, having the quarterback back in Juan Joseph, having just a number of starters back, and then looking at that first game against Mississippi College, which was another team that had, you know, from a strong conference in the American Southwest, had a lot of starters back, had their star quarterback at that point in time, although he's since been injured. That was a huge statement game, more or less, for them to win that opener in the backyard brawl, 42-6. At that point, I was taking, you know, Millsaps very seriously, but I think also I had them coming in pretty high, because you're just looking a little bit beyond that 8-2 record last year and beyond the fact that they weren't a playoff team last year. Certainly, they were the caliber of a playoff team, considering that they took you know, Trinity. You know, probably feel they should have had them beat, and we all know what happened in the Miracle in Mississippi. But now Millsaps, it seems like, from judging by their early scores, that they're in that sort of leave no doubt mode, where they're going to win, and they want to win big and win impressively to catch the attention of voters, which is not something that you necessarily have to do against the Colorado Colleges and the Rhodes and the mid level teams in the SCAC, but you have to do it in a game coming up this week where they play against unbeaten DePaul.
Four Millsaps, Joseph, 292 yards and 5 touchdowns passing, also 40 yards on the ground, and the defense holding Rhodes to 5 for 21 passing. Millsaps certainly looking strong defensively and putting up a lot of points on the board, unlike some other teams that we're looking at. Teams that one of them not in the top 25, but maybe could be. One of them in the top 25, but not really sure where to put them. And those are Montclair State and then Wisconsin-Eau Claire.
Yeah, and you look at those scores, and if you just look at the results really quickly, and you're glancing at it, and you're not, you know, really digging in to why these teams are winning the way they are, you know, it's very easy, and I'm guilty of it as anyone else at times, to just look at a score and, you know, Eau Claire wins 11-6, or Montclair, you know, needs a late field goal to beat Brockport State 16-14 this week. It's hard to know what to make of those results, because you think, well, if you're a top 25 team in Division III and you're playing an average team, you should really blow them out. But, you know, at some point, a win is a win, and if you're dominating defensively, which you look at Montclair State, they've really done the job defensively. You know, Mary Hardin Baylor is another team that their scores, they're running away offensively, but playing dominating defense. You know, you have to sometimes look past just the final score and see what makes this team great. Montclair looks like, and Wisconsin-Eau Claire looks like, they could be great defensive teams this year, and if they just have enough offense, you know, to propel them along, you know, they may have very good seasons. And, you know, Eau Claire doesn't have the unblemished record like some other teams, but they played Whitewater, lost that game 16-14. And you say, if you can hold Wisconsin-Whitewater, even with a whole new cast of characters, you hold them to 16 points, you must have a pretty good defense.
Montclair, they've allowed just 27 points in three games, but they've scored just 41. They play at William-Patterson next week, and then at Cortland State, one of a series of games which could help decide the NJAC title, although nobody's played more than three conference games, and most teams have played only two, so it's a little bit early to completely figure out where the NJAC is going. Right now, Cortland on top, 3-0. Montclair, College of New Jersey, tied at 2-0. A bunch of teams with one loss, including Rowan, which could still easily play into the playoff picture in pretty much any year.
Yeah, well, you know, that's been Rowan's trademark in the past. And you mentioned Cortland State. That's another team who's not, you know, winning these games 53-0 or 42-7 or whatever. You know, Cortland's wins have been, you know, they've given up a significant number of points while putting up a significant number of points in their victory. So, you know, you keep an eye on teams, because at a certain point, a win is a win. And then again, at a certain point, you're looking for these teams to really establish themselves as elite teams if you're going to move them that far up in the top 25. But, you know, sometimes it's a team with an elite defense and an okay offense, and you have to be able to look at the scores and look at the stats and, you know, even just go further than that and just read about how they play and watch them play and see that just because they don't score a whole bunch of points like somebody like Augsburg doesn't mean that they aren't going to be a very good team moving down the road here.
We talked about the Middle Atlantic Conference as a league that's on the way up this season. We'll talk about a couple of conferences that are falling. I think one of them kind of really goes hand in hand with the MAC rise right now, and that would have to be the Atlantic Central Football Conference over the first 4 weeks.
Yeah, well, quite obviously, you take the two Delaware Valley wins over both of the top teams in the ACFC. That alone, you know, probably slots the MAC back above the ACFC when you go down that list of conference rankings. But you also have, you know, the Salisbury-Albright game, pretty even game. And you have, you know, I think chances here now to see how these teams stack up in both of these leagues, because there's going to be enough results to compare. And for the ACFC, obviously, to get their standing back, you know, they have a non-conference schedule that sort of lasts all season because there's only three games. And, you know, they had to take – they by default sort of put a lot of teams up in the front there at their schedule because, you know, that's when the other teams in bigger conferences have openings. And when Salisbury and Wesley get down a later part of this schedule, some of the teams they had to pick up, they're going to be smooth sailing. They're going to look a lot better than they did against Delaware Valley. But you have to give the Aggies credit for doing what they did in both of those games. Can't say it was a fluke. They did it twice.
And then the one bright spot on the ACFC's slate so far this season is Frostburg State with the win back in week three against Brockport, winning 27-14. Played Widener tough this past weekend, losing 30-24. You know, struggled a little bit at W&J, lost 49-21, but did put some points on the board. So that is the one bright spot for the ACFC so far. I think one of the other teams that, or one of the other leagues that, we have to look at maybe falling in is the Iowa Conference.
Yeah, and that's sort of by virtue of Central not having all that experience back, having sort of a younger team. You know, the past couple of years they've been so adept at winning games in the fourth quarter and, you know, just playing solid defensively, not turning the ball over a whole bunch. And then when you get a younger team, you know, you're going to lose a little bit of that. So Central's, you know, down a notch at the top, lost to Wartburg. And then Wartburg, of course, lost that game to Augsburg, which is at this point, you know, maybe at best top third of the MIAC. You know, we don't have them as the top team quite yet. But you look at, okay, if Central's down, Wartburg is down, isn't there somebody else in the Iowa Conference who's really on their way up? You expect that out of Co, maybe, and we really haven't seen that so far. So, you know, Dubuque was another team that had been on the rise lately and is really off to a tough start. So, yeah, you know, we're waiting for somebody else in that conference to emerge, or it's just going to be the same couple cast of characters, and they've already, you know, just by virtue of that Wartburg-Augsburg game, kind of proven that the conference is not as strong necessarily as it has been in the past.
One of the other interesting things this past weekend, Keith, you know, I'm not necessarily ready to move the MIAA up a spot or two just based on one game. But the fact that Trine, who was already kind of looking a little bit like an up-and-comer out of that league, goes and beats the preseason favorite from the Heartland Conference in Franklin this past weekend has to open some eyes, too.
Yeah, and, you know, not just that they won that game, you know, but the way they did it, you know, started off strong, 10-0 lead. Franklin came back, took the lead at the half, 20-16, and then Trine, you know, put it together and was able to pull it out in the fourth quarter. And that's what you like to see, a team that when they face adversity, they're not necessarily favored to win the game. How do they respond to that? And Trine controlled the ball for 39 minutes in that game. And I know Franklin is a passing team, and they don't necessarily hold the ball a long time. But the with a team that with that much talent, you keep Chad Rupp, their star quarterback, and Franklin's offense off the field, and you control the ball. That's sort of how you win a game like that. And also, 5 turnovers, including 4 Franklin fumbles, don't hurt at all either.
Yeah, you mentioned one of the real odd stats. I think the other one was one, of course, that we spotlighted on Saturday was the fact that Trine's scoring drives, not a one of them was longer than 39 yards. They did take some advantage of field position, that's for sure. And Franklin, you know, they had 334 yards to Trine's 336, and the other than the time of possession, a lot of things were pretty equal. But Trine, with the 3-point win at home, kind of striking a blow for the MIAA. I know, however, that Trine doesn't have a whole lot of time to rest on its laurels because they play Hope this week.
Well, and Hope is another team that consistently will schedule the strongest teams they can find in the Midwest to test themselves so that when they get into that MIAA schedule, you know, they've been they've been pushed by these other teams. And, you know, they've been humbled a little bit. I think you go to Wheaton, as Hope did this past week, and lose 47-7. You know, you have to go back to practice and say, all right, these are the things we did well. These are the things we can do well. And this is what Wheaton exposed. This is what, you know, whoever else we played earlier on exposed in us. And this is the areas we have to shore up. So, you know, as far as the MIAA standing, that's a big win for Trine and pushes the MIAA up a little bit. And I think Albion's performance against Central, depending on what you think of Central, you know, maybe gives you a better impression of the MIAA. But also Hope is a team, you know, that does pretty well in that league and, has been pretty battered and bruised in the early going.
Yeah, in fact, Hope hasn't won a non-conference game since the opening weekend of the 2004 season in which they edged John Carroll. They they lost their next two conference games, their non-conference games that year. They went 0-3 the year after. They went 0-4 in 06, 0-3 last year, and then 0-4 this season. Hope challenges itself and then does well in the MIAA, but just hasn't been able to win a single non-conference game in quite some time.
Well, you can go ahead and boo me now, but it's a very hopeful schedule that they play because they are you've seen Central on it, you've seen Wheaton, and these are teams that are consistently among the better teams in the Midwest and in the West region or North region, for Hope, I mean, I think it's a system that works. They don't go into that schedule planning on losing those games, but I think it seems that they do it to push themselves so that when they get into the MIAA, to be honest with you, the rest of the competition almost looks kind of easy.
Looking ahead at what is coming up in week 5, there's a couple of centerpiece games. There's a couple of games that looked really good on paper back in August and now are not looking so interesting. And then there's a couple of games that didn't look all that interesting when the season began and now take on some pretty crucial importance. I think one of those games, we just talked about Trine at Hope, but there's another game that maybe didn't look so, didn't look, from a playoff perspective, didn't look like a key game. But now this game between Carleton and St. Olaf in the MIAC is carrying a little bit more than just the Northfield Minnesota bragging rights.
Well, again, you know, we mentioned it a little bit last week. We're looking for some separation in the MIAC because you had pretty much 6 or 7 teams off to good starts. And, pretty much Bethel, the defending champion at this point, is the only team that's clearly out of the race, at least by wins and losses. And you got a certain number of teams, and Carleton and St. Olaf are both among them, and you need to have those head-to-head games, you know, to sort out those teams that are looking pretty good.
Carleton 3-0, 1-0 in the conference. St. Olaf 3-1, and then 1-1 in the MAC. There's the Carleton's one of the unbeatens at the top. Augsburg has played one conference game. Concordia Moorhead at 2-0 with the half game lead on everybody else for the moment. Other games that are interesting and that we thought would be interesting pretty much all along. You can't really go past Hardin-Simmons at Mary Hardin-Baylor.
No, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's going to be the marquee game this week. But, you know, going back to what you alluded to, Pat, there are games that at the beginning of the season, you know, Hardin-Simmons, Mary Hardin-Baylor is a key game in the ASC every season. But it's looking a lot better because Hardin-Simmons is off to such a good start, playing, you know, well enough on defense to let that offense shine, let them win games that way. Mary Hardin-Baylor looks like, you know, you would know they graduated as much talent as they did. I think they only had three starters back on offense to start the season. But, you know, their results so far, that really dominating win over Southern Nazarene, and then the past couple of weeks just blowing teams off the field in Texas Lutheran and McMurray, you know, not the toughest opponents. This is the game they judge themselves on, the Hardin-Simmons game. That's a huge one. Going back to another game, I think, Pat, that wouldn't have caught our eye if we were looking at week five in the preseason. But now you see this game and you say, all right, this could be a big game. It's in the Northwest Conference, especially when you think for down the road, this conference has its first automatic qualifier this year. You have Willamette going to Whitworth, helping to sort out the top of that conference.
Yep, Whitworth lost its quarterback, Corey Kemp, in the Redlands game. Got injured. They got their doors blown off. Then had a nice come from behind win against Chapman on Saturday. So Whitworth gets a chance to see if it has righted the ship a little bit. Whitworth, of course, not only has Willamette this week, then they go to Linfield the next week, and I'm fairly certain that the folks at Linfield are eagerly awaiting that game after they've lost to Whitworth each of the last two seasons.
You know, and the other thing, too, is that Linfield starts out with that huge non-conference game against Hardin-Simmons, goes down to Texas, plays them tough, but doesn't come home with the win. And then you have an off week, you have a game against a non-division opponent. And, you know, I mean, I just got to imagine that the Wildcats fans are just ready to jump back into these rivalry games in the Northwest.
Yep, they host Menlo this week and then Whitworth. Then they go to Lewis and Clark, which... you know, it probably isn't going to register on the national Richter scale. And then they host Willamette on October 25th. This is where the Northwest Conference kind of landscape is right now. Some of the other games go on, a couple interesting ones in the Wisconsin Conference. La Crosse is going to play at Wisconsin Whitewater, and La Crosse, as we feared after week one, still winless. They are going to face the defending national champions. And then Wisconsin-Oshkosh, which has had a nice early season so far, they go to Eau Claire.
Yeah, and I think that might be the game that tells us a little bit more about where this conference race is going. The La Crosse and Whitewater game would have been one of those ones we circled at the beginning of the year, thinking it's going to be a huge game. And it still could be, because La Crosse is one of those teams where, you know, they always play better against Whitewater. You know, they seem to have a good rivalry going between the two teams. Whitewater been sharp the past couple of weeks, looking better each week. Got a freshman running back now that's pretty much filling the role. Has a quarterback that's been waiting their turn in Jeff Donovan, completing a lot of his passes, taking care of the ball, and has a defense, you know, in Whitewater that's been pretty dominating. So certainly La Crosse is going to need their best effort here, but they would have said that, you know, no matter if they were coming in 4-0 or 0-4.
And, of course, you know, La Crosse winless so far, but 0-0 in the Wisconsin Conference, so plenty of chances to still come back and win that conference title. You know, one of the games that looked good in August, looked good in July, looked good in 2005, looked good in 2001, doesn't look very good right now, is St. John's going to Bethel. And then one of the other games that is going to have a key impact on the Empire 8 race is Hardwick going to St. John Fisher.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are two games that would have jumped off the schedule at the beginning of the season. And one of them still has a lot riding on it. Not so much for St. John's and Bethel, but I think part of that is, you know, Bethel's got to play with some pride this week. And you know, they are behind the eight ball as far as the conference title is concerned, defending any of that, getting back to the playoffs. They're pretty much out of that already at 1-3. But it doesn't take much for the Royals to get up for St. John's. You know, that's a game that's always a huge game. St. John's already has a loss. They can't afford to lose again and stay in this race with so many talented teams. So I think it's still going to be a pretty good one. And I think Hartwick at St. John Fisher, that one looked better 2 weeks ago. I think Ithaca putting up 69 points on Hartwick. And then St. John Fisher turning around and holding Ithaca to 6 points is sort of telling who we expect to control this matchup this week. Now, Hartwick's got the type of offense that could explode at any moment, but it looked like St. John Fisher played really great defense there, especially in the second half against Ithaca. Remember, that game was 6-3 at the half, 9-3. Midway through the third quarter, and ended up being a 37-6 win for St. John Fisher against Ithaca on Saturday.
We're coming up to the end of our time, but just a couple of other games this weekend. Carthage at Illinois Wesleyan, RPI at the University of Rochester, Johns Hopkins hosts Muhlenberg. Those are all games that got some interesting factors in conference races there. And then, the former ODAC title game, seemingly, between Hampton-Sydney and Bridgewater. Bridgewater hosts this, and is Bridgewater relegated this season to the same kind of role you just talked about for Bethel?
I think absolutely that's exactly what it is. You know, it's not a game that has the conference title implications that you may have expected it to have because of the way Bridgewater's played. Now, Bridgewater's not out of the race yet because the ODAC really just getting underway as far as their conference games are concerned. And honestly, you know, you look at the ODAC and you're looking for a contender besides Hampton-Sydney. And Guilford didn't really represent well against Hampton-Sydney, losing 35-14 back on Saturday. And Randolph-Macon, lost their first two games, has now won two in a row. They beat Catholic, which was undefeated. So maybe those teams, maybe Washington and Lee emerges as a contender. But right now, yeah, Bridgewater just playing Hampton-Sydney, I think, just to go out and play the best game they can and show a little pride.
And that is our Week 4 podcast of Around the Nation. Tune back later in the week as you get Keith McMillan's Around the Nation column coming up on Wednesday night.